This is Neve McIntosh. I'm Madame Vastra from Doctor Who, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I will see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for November 16th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm not Han Solo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Chip, my social calendar is filling up. We have so much to do. Happy fall. Congratulations to everyone that survived the time change. And it's so dark and everybody just complained about the dark all week.
Oh.
Yes, happy life day to you, Chip.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Chip, are you a fan of... I can't even get through that sentence. Are you a fan of the Hallmark movies, the Christmas movies, Chip?
Steve, let's just say that I have a couple of young ladies who are my daughters who have enjoyed the Hallmark series of movies. And, you know, this time of year brings out all the holiday movies from Hallmark.
It is that time of year, 100%. I get it. I understand that there are plenty of people that are watching these Hallmark movies, and the formulaic idea of these holiday movies, I was excited, Chip. I was excited. I was posting on social media about a new Hallmark movie that came out on Saturday night at 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern, 1 December night premiered this week.
Well, that sounds lovely, Steve. I just want to be clear on this. When we watch them, we were looking for the community standard that of Christmas decorations that should go up for the entire community.
And there is certainly an element of that in this movie. The one young character is very, very secure in her ability to decorate, and she buys, I don't know, 6 bags of decorations to decorate her hotel room.
Well, there you go. It's really important also to have like the proper formula going on. Steve, tell me about the tension that goes on in 1 December night.
Yes. This is a movie about two aging rock stars, Bedford and Sullivan, Steve Bedford and Mike Sullivan. They had a band. It was the hottest rock band in the world. Everybody knows Bedford and Sullivan, and there's tour buses with their name posted on the side, not for their tour, but for people to come and tour their home. And by tour their home, I mean drive by on a bus for Bedford and Sullivan. And these two men, they broke up. The band broke up, and now they're going to get back together to play a sold-out show 10 years later.
Well, Christmas is a magical time of year, Steve. You know, miracles can happen.
Yes. Even two very gray-haired, very, very old actors can become the hottest rock band in America. Mike Sullivan, played by Peter Gallagher, and Steve Bedford, played by Bruce Campbell.
Well, you've got me here. This looks fascinating, Steve. Is it everything that we would want in a holiday film?
I wanted this to be fun. I wanted this to be wonderful. I love Bruce Campbell. His charisma lights up a screen. The first moment that his face hit the screen, I was excited to see Bruce Campbell. His charisma is electric. But my God, the storyline just left me cold. I don't know how to read this storyline as important in any way.
Steve, you just don't have enough Christmas in you at this point. I'm telling you, the Christmas spirit will eventually come, and this will be much better.
Okay. Throw in a Dee Dee Khan as the plucky waitress. You might remember Dee Dee Khan from Happy Days, where she was in one episode. She's also Frenchie from Grease. She is the plucky waitress that helps out in this December conversation.
Steve, there are people who love these films and want to watch them again and again. Anyway, and then there's others. So would you suggest that a person who loves this type of film would enjoy this type of film?
It follows the pattern. It follows that formula. This is a Hallmark movie that those people who love the Hallmark movies will love this. Our friend Dane, who loves the Hallmark movies at Christmas time, will watch this and will enjoy it.
All right, Steve, are there any movies on Disney Plus, because there was Disney Plus Day, that don't require like a big mug of hot chocolate?
Happy Disney Plus Day, everyone. Disney has celebrated their own streaming service with an annual celebration. Happy second anniversary of Disney Plus. This was November 12th. This was last Friday. And they brought out Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which was in theaters in September, is now available on Disney Plus. And guess what, Chip? I got to see this movie finally.
All right, so tell me, what did you think of Marvel's Shang-Chi?
I like this movie very much. I really enjoyed the martial arts element of it, the way that they filmed all of those different martial arts scenes. Michelle Yeoh is still amazing at her ability to really make me think that she can really... I'm trying to think of the nice word, that she can really hurt the bad guys with her martial arts skills. There's definitely that feeling of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, that one scene where Michelle Yeoh is on the wires and doing the acrobatics, very reminiscent of her work in that film. This was a good movie. I enjoyed this to no end. The comedy from Awkwafina is priceless. She is a national treasure. I will watch anything with Awkwafina in it.
And were there any other films or anything else you watched on Disney Plus?
The other thing on Disney Plus for the celebration, and I'm using quotation marks here, for the celebration of the streaming service, The Simpsons put together a very irreverent, we are a part of the Disney family now. And they had all of the Disney characters, every obscure Disney character that you could think of in the Simpsons episode, the Simpsons in Plusiversary.
Well, did you think of this?
They had Goofy drunk at Moe's Bar. I don't know how Disney allowed this Simpsons irreverence to happen to their classic characters, and I really think that the makers of The Simpsons are trying to get fired at this point. I really think that after 30 years, they are done making this show, and they don't want to do it anymore, and they're trying to get fired.
Well, if only Disney could find some way to promote themselves. I mean, they're going to have to do something.
Isn't Disney losing money? Shouldn't they be asking people to send them more money? Oh no, wait. They have all of the money.
Well, Steve, you know, America doesn't just celebrate Disney Plus Day. Is there any celebrations maybe from across the pond?
Yeah, we are in the middle. We are halfway through the 6 episodes of Doctor Who Flux, the 6-week-long story, season 13. I have to tell you, episode 1, we haven't talked about this. Episode 1 of Flux was just crazy. The number of things that were happening in that first hour of this story, it was impossible to pay attention to everything because everything was happening simultaneously. And we in the community got together and discussed this. We said, aha, Chris Chibnall, is throwing everything at us in episode 1 so that we are intrigued enough to keep watching. Episode 2 of Flux, phenomenal Doctor Who. There is a Santaran war that takes place instead of the Prussian War, where in the Crimea, we've got the British soldiers battling these aliens instead of Russians, and the people in that timeline have never heard of Russia. There was never a thing called Russia. The Santarans were always there. We're going to see some great storytelling in the second half of Flux in the coming 3 weeks. I look forward to this as much as I can look forward to just about any television show at this point.
So this Doctor Who iteration is meeting its expectations now.
For the first time, I can honestly say for the first time in 3 years, I'm excited about Doctor Who. I was not excited by the first two seasons. This third season, phenomenal storytelling. I'm edge of my seat watching to see what's going to happen in Doctor Who Flux. You got a chance to see a documentary about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and blockchains.
I did. I got to watch Cryptopia, Bitcoin, Blockchains, and the Future of the Internet. It says 2019. It also says 2021. So I have no idea when this was actually released to the public. My assumption is that it was went to festivals and then kind of got lost during COVID. I enjoyed this conversation. It is a presentation about the revolution that was the internet. What they're suggesting is that we are going to be changing again, mm-hmm. and that this is our future. And using the blockchain, potentially using Bitcoin as a currency, what that means, the infighting that's going on, the different types of electronic currencies that are out there or electronic exchanges. They talk a little bit about that. And just some of the ideas that are going on around that. If you have a passing interest in this and don't know a lot about it, this may be a good place to start because I do think that they give some nice illustrations and some good graphics on sort of how to think about this coming technology.
Yeah, the premise of Web 3.0 is an all-in meta lifestyle. This metaverse that Facebook has rolled out is this Web 3.0. And having the currency in that web experience where we can live, quote unquote, in this web experience. That's Web 3.0, and it's controversial is a nice word, and terrifying is also in there.
There is the argument, especially it's made in here, that you actually can re-own your data. So as you're currently using the web, we started out with a world of, for many people, AOL or something equivalent. Then we went to like this wild open Wild West. And then we've slowly moved back into like the world of Facebook or Google's or things like that, where you're mm-hmm. kind of, you are the product in here. One of the arguments here is that you can go back to the World Wide Web where it is wild and you can go to it. And the question is how can you interact with it, remain, I guess, more anonymous? Anonymous is not the proper word. To own your data mm-hmm. Would be a little bit better. And then sort of how that would play out. Certainly, Zuckerberg, which is not really addressed in this because when this was filmed, it wasn't announced, is not part of this discussion. And the metaverse that Zuckerberg is talking about is different from what they are presenting in this film.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so the NFTs, the non-fungible tokens, is a part of this conversation about how we can own things, including data, and reinvest our own data into the internet. I'm interested in what the future of the internet looks like, for sure. Opening this week, we've got another Ghostbusters movie. Chip, are you excited for Ghostbusters Afterlife?
This actually looks like a film that is what people wanted from a Ghostbusters rebirth, I would say. This looks very exciting, and certainly, COVID has delayed this release. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a big film.
Yeah, Ivan Reitman's son Jason is directing, so I have high expectations for what Jason Reitman can bring to a literally next generation of Ghostbusters. Paul Rudd plays the son of one of the Ghostbusters from the original 80s film. Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things is a wonderful actor. I look forward to what he's going to bring as one of the grandchildren of the originals. And we've got all the original cast in here. Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, Sigourney Weaver, and Annie Potts are returning to their roles in Ghostbusters Afterlife.
How wonderful. Steve, are there any Shakespeare films coming out?
Let me explain, Chip. King Richard is opening this week. King Richard, featuring William Smith as the father of Serena and Venus Williams, the tennis pros.
It's sort of like Shakespeare, right, Steve?
It's got the family drama for sure. The question is about what Richard Williams did for or to Venus and Serena Williams. He invented these tennis stars before they were born. He had a plan for making these girls into tennis stars.
He's no Cylon, Steve.
He had an actual plan. Is that a good thing, or is that something that parents shouldn't do to their kids? There's no doubt that Serena and Venus Williams are phenomenal tennis pros.
Certainly a top five or top 10 athlete of the last century.
Does that make it okay for this father to push these girls to that stardom?
This looks fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Steve, do we have any films with potentially weird actors?
Weird actors. There's all the actors are weird, Chip. All actors are weird. We have a movie called Come On, Come On, a radio journalist embarking on a cross-country trip with his young nephew. This one features a weird actor, Joaquin Phoenix, and a weird actor, Scoot McNairy. You've got that going for you.
Well, that's going on. It looks like it's in black and white, so it's got to be important, Steve.
This is one of like 4 black and white movies coming out in the next few weeks. So black and white equals important is the message that we're getting from like 4 different movies this coming awards season.
Steve, you know, the holidays are coming. Are there any horror films that we should be watching?
Speaking of awards season, there's a movie called Black Friday that's coming out this week. This is a zombie horror movie featuring Bruce Campbell fighting zombies. It's never been done. Bruce Campbell has never fought a horde of parasite-infected people. This time
in a Toys R Us, Steve.
It's a toy store. Bruce Campbell with a goofy grandfatherly mustache being in charge of a store where zombies are infecting. This has never been done before. I will give you my money to watch Black Friday.
Steve, the boomers love their music and they love the Beach Boys. Is there anything for them this week?
Yeah, another Brian Wilson documentary is coming out this week. This one, Brian Wilson, Long Promised Road, a documentary about one of the most interesting musicians of the baby boomer generation.
And certainly there's an opportunity for Gen X to respond, Steve. They're angry. Is there something for them?
Yes. Where's our movie? We are tired of talking about Brian Wilson. Where's the Alanis Morissette documentary? Oh, there it is. There's a documentary on HBO called Jagged. This is the story of Alanis Morissette. I will watch the heck out of this documentary.
So, Steve, my kids really love Home Alone, and Macaulay Culkin is a national treasure. Is there something for us?
Yes, Chip. There's a movie coming out this week. I can't even believe this exists. It is called Pups Alone. It is Home Alone with talking dogs, a whole house full of talking dogs, all the stars that you can imagine voicing talking dogs in a Home Alone scenario.
And Steve, it looks like it's going to be silly fun. So those little 5-year-olds and grandma and grandpa are going to love sitting down to watch a little Pups Alone, Steve.
I agree with you. This is made for 5-year-olds and grandmas. and it's got an all-star cast, and it's just, there's something about talking dogs, Chip. I just can't listen to Malcolm McDowell voicing a talking dog. It has Eric Roberts. Okay, Eric Roberts, a talking cat, different from talking dogs.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. You know, I have tried, Chip. I've tried to bring a little literature into this show for 8.5 years. Pam Bedore, our wonderful professor from the University of Connecticut, has tried to make us better, smarter people, and she brought us Octavia Butler, the author that we never read until we met Pam. And earlier this month, she had us reading the last Octavia Butler book, which was all about a vampire culture. And I thought, you know what? I enjoyed that book so much, I'm going to delve deeper into the works of Octavia Butler. And I went to her first book. It's called Kindred, and it was published in 1979. And guess what, Chip? It's a time travel story.
Well, you remember what Pam Bedore said, and I quote, she said, "You will be learned." So, you know, one day, Steve, you and I will actually own this language we speak.
Yeah, we're getting better. Come on, 8.5 years of talking into microphones. We are getting better at this every day.
This sounds fascinating, by the way. Octavia Butler was introduced to us. She certainly is, at the time, we would call certainly a change in science fiction. Mm-hmm. Where at one time it was a very male-dominated field as far as this writing is concerned. Tell us a little bit about Octavia Butler and why this book could be important.
I think that this is a very important book. This was published, like I said, in 1979. She was, at the time, the first Black woman to successfully publish science fiction. And there's a reason why this book was successful. This is such a well-thought-out, interesting, complicated story of time travel. She, as a Black woman, is able to write a story about if she was thrust into the past, she would have a very different experience than a white male would have. She is thrust into a slavery time where she has to face the issues of slavery and human rights and racial prejudice. She has to try to defend herself, and when she defends herself, she's punished for it in those slave times.
All right, so it sounds like that our character has somehow gets thrown back into Antebellum, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly not the Deep South, but certainly there's some challenges going on there. And what you should know in geography, you know that you're close enough to the north, but not quite the north. So tell us a little bit about this.
This is a character who is a Black woman in California in 1976. In 1976, the civil rights movement was certainly giving more rights to Americans. And the narrator here is certainly living in that modern time. When she's thrown into slave times in Antebellum, Maryland, she brings with her the ideals of that society from 1976. And she has to find a balance between who she is, who she thinks America can be, and the situation in this distant past. She's moved into this past through a connection with one of her relatives in that distant past. This relative happens to be a white boy that, when he's in danger, his soul, his spirit, his existence reaches into the future, 1976, and brings this main character to him to rescue him. And It's unexplained as to how it happens, but the explanation is this boy is her kindred, is her family, and he is in need, and she goes to him through time and space and solves his problem. And then she is brought back to 1976 when her life is in danger. This allows Octavia Butler to play with the idea of family, to play with the idea of race relations, to play with the idea of real absolute danger for these characters.
So one of the things I want to mention, and I think maybe you missed this part. So this was published in 1979. But the story takes place in 1976. Mm-hmm. And 1976 was the United States Bicentennial. So there are celebrations going on everywhere. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the ideals, certainly giving a glorified view of the American experience. And certainly the American experience has been, as time kind of marches on, you know, more and more people are experiencing the rights that that were promised to them is what I would say. Mm-hmm. And so this is very important because, you know, certainly the Black experience or the African-American experience to get to that point in 1979 was very different. And certainly you could even argue that even today there, you know, it's we're still trying to get to those ideals, as we will always try to get to ideals. Mm-hmm. But certainly that is a play on this, because that celebration that's going on outside in the real world certainly is very different that's going on for our character here, who is, you know, being written about, and once again, the book being published in 1979.
I suspect that she wrote it in 1976, and it actually got to the publishing stage after the Bicentennial celebration. Because, yes, that Bicentennial does play into the storyline. Like, she is celebrating America. She is thinking that those ideals are happening, and then the juxtaposition that Octavia Butler is able to produce here, showing us what life was really like, or maybe what life was really like for these people living under slavery, is wonderful.
So why is this book important? What came out of the story that said, hey, this is a good story, and, you know, we need to pay attention to Octavia Butler?
Octavia Butler is such a wonderful writer of simple, easy science fiction. Time travel is one of the simplest, easiest stories, but she writes this with such a deep literature sort of feeling. Very similar to what we saw with Fledgling, her final novel, where we are reading a simple story about vampires, but the depth of the writing, the thinking that goes into it. This is just as accessible as any time travel story, but it has that element of you need to examine your own thoughts about history, about people, about civil rights. And she's able to do that in a way that's intriguing the whole time. There's no moment in this story where I go, oh, this is the preachy part. This is the part where she's going, how dare you be who you are? Never. It never happens in this story. This character is who she is. This character is going through these situations and finding a way to survive and finding a solution to all of the problems of all these characters.
So I found Octavia Butler, when we read Fledgling, to be very, very accessible. Sometimes when you get to science fiction, you get lost in the words, you get lost in the story concept. Yeah. And she was like, oh, so for a person who has interest in this subject, but certainly is fearful of being lost, I think Fledgling was worthy of that. And from what you're discussing here, that this is just part of her writing style.
Yep.
So here's my question on that. Will you be reading more Octavia Butler?
I will. I will seek out more of her work for sure. Pam has brought us this wonderful author that we were ignorant to. And now that I have the knowledge that this writer is accessible, very accessible, and that this writer has something important to say, I am definitely going to read more Octavia Butler. So that's Kindred by Octavia Butler. It was published in 1979. I suggest it highly.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. What's on your calendar for the next couple of weeks, Chip? Yeah, right. You don't really celebrate Life Day. Tomorrow is Life Day, everyone. Happy Life Day. Get your glowing orb. Get your red Snuggies out. Let's celebrate Life Day together.
You know what? Maybe you can get a medal this time, Steve.
Maybe Chewbacca gets a medal. For those of you who don't know, Life Day is the Star Wars holiday celebrated every November 17th. It is based on the Star Wars holiday special, the phenomenally terrible Star Wars direct to home video. It wasn't even home video in at that time. It was just on TV. Star Wars had this huge impact on America, and ABC thought, we can make a Star Wars special. Every kid is hungry for more Star Wars. We can put it together, and we can put Bea Arthur and and Art Carney, and it could be a musical extravaganza. It's so bad. It is such a terrible holiday special, but we celebrate Life Day nonetheless.
And for all of our young people who will never watch that, it was referenced in The Mandalorian. So there you go.
It was. Episode one of The Mandalorian. The blue fish creature says, oh, I was trying to make it home for Life Day. And all of the Gen Xers went, oh, Life Day! Life Day is canon in Star Wars! It's exciting. California, Star Wars land, the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is celebrating Life Day all week. They've got a special menu of food and all the celebrations. I wish I was in California to celebrate Life Day this week.
Well, Steve, you know, a couple weeks from now, Thanksgiving will be with us. And of course, that means Black Friday afterwards. Is there something that the people in Chicago should know?
Yes. Chicago TARDIS 2021 is happening. After a year in the dark world of no conventions, the Doctor Who convention is opening next weekend, November 26th, 27th, and 28th. I will be at Chicago TARDIS. I look forward to seeing all my friends from Chicago TARDIS. Our local Doctor Who convention, which is, I have to say, it is the best Doctor Who convention in the Midwest. It is full of guests. We have so many stars from the show coming into Chicago and just hanging out with us and just having fun. It is the most fun I have at any convention, and I am surely excited that we get to be back in person at Chicago TARDIS November 26th through 28th.
And for those who have spouses, just remember it's right across from a Target and a shopping mall. So get all your Black Friday stuff done and explore Doctor Who.
Yeah, our friend Tony Lee from England was always excited for Black Friday because they don't really do that in England. There's no big Black Friday. He was always excited to be here in the Chicagoland area to take advantage of Americanism and that shopping. Oh, let's go shopping.
Steve, not everyone refers to Thanksgiving as Thanksgiving. So, Steve, is there something that maybe the Mystery Science Theater group would help us with?
Yes. Thanksgiving is Thanksgiving, and we give thanks, and it's also Turkey Day. Everybody knows Turkey Day. This is my favorite thing to do all week. People will ask me, what's your favorite holiday? And I will answer, Turkey Day. And I'll say, you know what Turkey Day is, right? And they think about Thanksgiving and turkey and pumpkin pie. I said, no! Turkey Day is the day that we watch bad movies. The Turkey Day Marathon is happening next Thursday, November 25th, on every streaming way that you can think of. Go to MST3K, turkeyday.com, for all the details of all the movies that we'll be watching.
Well, you know, the beautiful part is we know what Steve's life's like. So on Thanksgiving, he watches bad movies. And on Christmas, he watches Star Wars.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
Speaking of Mystery Science Theater and witty people, Steve, is there something we need to know?
Yes. The Mads are back. The mad scientists from the original Mystery Science Theater, Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff, are touring when they can. And when they can't tour, they have started a streaming, monthly streaming, where they riff some of the world's worst movies, and they are taking on, for their December title, the worst movie of all time, Manos, The Hands of Fate.
I think you made me watch this, Steve.
I think you have watched Manos. I think I have forced all of my friends to watch Manos, The Hands of Fate. All of our friends, including Jackie Naaman Jones, who is Little Debbie from that movie. She is one of our friends of the show, and she is going to join Frank and Trace when they are riffing this movie on December 14th. Get your tickets now, themadsareback.com.
Well, Steve, you know, the holiday season is approaching so quickly, and that means Christmas music. Does Elton John have any special words for Ed Sheeran, Steve?
There are words that we are not going to share that Elton John said about Ed Sheeran. Ed Sheeran is very important in this timeline. That is the only thing I know about Ed Sheeran, because Doctor Who said that in an episode 2 years ago. Ed Sheeran is important in this timeline.
So Elton John and Ed Sheeran will be coming out with a Christmas song some point. They have not announced when it will be released. But Sir Elton was excoriating Big Mouth F and Sharon. He was pretty upset with them for revealing their secret holiday duet to an interviewer. So now, Steve, my vocabulary has expanded. I have learned the word excoriate.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the F word. You already knew that one.
Well, I mean, I've heard it a few times, Steve.
But to hear Elton John being upset at Ed Sheeran for revealing this secret, like, we are going to do this duet. It's going to be wonderful. We're going to release it. And Ed Sheeran broke the secret. You can just understand. Elton John likes to put on a show, doesn't he?
Well, I'm thinking Elton John's getting older. And this is how they communicate.
he's not going to pull any punches with a young t-shirted Ed Sheeran. Well,
he can hold back, Steve. He can hold back. But why? Could. Why hold back?
I envision Ed Sheeran in a t-shirt and jeans with his hair all mussed because he's British and he doesn't comb his hair. And then Elton John in the featheriest outfit ever, just being just huge, larger than life Elton John, and just being angry at Ed Sheeran for spilling the beans on this secret.
This generation's Liberace, Steve, Sir Elton John. Yeah.
No doubt about that. No question on that. And I don't know who Ed Sheeran is to this generation, but I know that he's important in this timeline. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yes, sir. Coming up next week, we've got a lot to talk about. There's a lot of things on our calendar. We will have Professor Pam back next week to discuss a book, and it'll be wonderful. I look forward to Tuesday, November 23rd for a lot of reasons, including the anniversary of Doctor Who.
Can we have some cooking tips on how to prepare a turkey, Steve? Yes. Go ahead and take it out and prepare that brine, Steve.
Call up Harvey Korman and have him give you some instructions for Life Day. That's how you prepare a turkey. Oh, Life Day. Oh, Star Wars. If you need more information, give us a call or text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve. I'm the nice one.
I'm Chip Hassenflow, and I may not be.
Let's see you in the future.